The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we were discussing the idea of persistence of species in opposition to the idea of intermediate species that we talked about for some time. And in that program, I was simply giving numbers of examples of organisms using evolutionary time that have existed for tens or hundreds of millions of years essentially unchanged. Now, there is a little wrinkle here that may not occur offhand, but what I want to do now is go to some evolutionists and look at their comments about this, including one, an interesting one by Darwin. Quote, "Why, if species have descended from other species by fine gradations, is not all nature in confusion, instead of being, as we see them, the species well defined?" End quote. Now, what he's talking about is the idea, if you had a single form, original form of life, or what he actually said in Origin of the Species, was five or six animals and five or six plants. But everything came from those, and they are evolving away from those original organisms by fine gradations, then nature ought to be in confusion. And by the way, if that's what we were to observe in nature, there would not be any possibility of classification, because we simply would not know whether a particular organism was really that organism itself, or whether it was intermediate between two other organisms. And this, of course, is exactly the kind of thing that we do not find in nature. It is one of those very interesting and fortunate places where it is handy to compare a creationist view with an evolutionist view. Now, if you were an evolutionist and knew absolutely nothing about the fossil record, what would you predict you would find there? Well, you would predict that you would find this variety of organisms with gradual changes between one kind and another, so that the possibility of classification would simply be non-existent, just gradation, a series from unicellular to people. And of course, before we come to conclusion, if you're a creationist, what would you predict you'd find in the fossil record if you did not know what was there? Well, creationists, of course, would predict that you would find clumps of organisms. You would find horses or trees or jackrabbits or whatever, without any of those supposed connecting links between one group and another. Now, when you go to the fossil record and look, the latter is what, in fact, we see there. And as we will argue later, it is my opinion that the fossil record is much more supportive of creation than it is evolution, but we will leave those arguments for then. Now, in any case, Darwin's comment here is interesting. He was aware of the problem. And as I think I mentioned in an earlier program, one place he said some people would see in that problem a sufficient reason to overthrow his whole theory. And I would be inclined to agree about that. Now, there's a quote by Professor Richard Goldschmidt, University of California. This is the famous geneticist, evolutionary geneticist, worked back in the 1920s, 1930s. Quote, "Nowhere have the limits of the species been transgressed. These limits are separated from the limits of the next good species by the unbridged gap, which also includes sterility," end quote. So he's arguing against the idea of the gradual change from one organism to another, and this then would be the basis of the persistence of species. Obviously, we do not accept the millions and billions of years, as I have indicated often. It is the consistent position for a creationist is that the Earth is fairly young, as opposed to being millions of years old or billions of years old. So we are not, the millions and billions of the years is not something that the creationist defends, but it is part of the evolutionary theory. Now, there's a man by Dr. F.R. Moulton, who was the former permanent secretary of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He was a professor of astronomy at the University of Chicago. Quote, "Perhaps the most striking and important characteristic of inheritance is its stability or fidelity to type. This is consistent." I'm commenting now, not his quote. "This is consistent with the idea of persistence of species. Because of the genetic material that is there, parents are going to form organisms like themselves. They are not going to, a parent is not going to produce an organism wildly different from itself. And so this is the reason that we see this persistence of species, not for the hundreds of millions of years, but from the time of their creation down to this day, we find these clumps of organisms because of that community of genetic material. And this is what Dr. Moulton is commenting about. Now back to his quote. "Although the young of any species may differ appreciably from their immediate parents because they carry the genes of numerous ancestors." Now, I would respond to that. I have a reaction to that statement. I will not stop and give it here. "Although the young of any species may differ appreciably," I don't know how to respond to his appreciably. We see different color, some minor variations, that kind of thing. And that is the only legitimate appreciable difference. I don't think that's what he has in mind, however. "Although the young of any species may differ appreciably from their immediate parents because they carry the genes of numerous ancestors, yet in the species and even the variety sense, they are remarkably stable. Human beings, for example, are so stable genetically that long periods of living under widely different climatic conditions, eating widely different foods, and having widely different habits have not produced very substantial physical differences in them." And this is an interesting comment. He is exactly right, and we can look at all sorts of examples. Again, horses and dogs and cats and so on. Humans are interesting for the simple reason that any human on the face of the earth is interfertile with any other human being on the face of the earth. Now, there may be size differences which preclude the possibility of reproduction, and there may be some other difficulties as well. But genetically, all human beings are interfertile, and this, of course, is the condition that gives rise to the idea of a species itself. So you can have variations, but those variations do not transgress that core of similarity that's there. And as I observed a program or two ago, if that similarity is changed appreciably, you get to the point where there is no longer interfertility, and you are varying away to a degree that simply means the offspring is not viable. So that there are some bounds which pretty much ensure the idea of persistence of species, even for long periods of time. Now, Dr. Henry Morris, who of course is a creationist, quote, "Many, many species have remained absolutely fixed through all the supposed millions and millions of years of geologic time. Many such are now known, and it is certain that many more would be recognized if it were not for the somewhat dishonest habit paleontologists have of giving new names to all species found as fossils, regardless of how closely they resemble living species." Now, let me stop here for a moment. You say, well, that doesn't ever happen. As a matter of fact, it happens regularly that you can have identical species. You go to the fossil cabinets and look at them. And as you examine them, they are identical with one another. And yet, because they may have been found in different strata or for other reasons, they have completely different scientific names. And these are included then as additional new species, when in fact they are obviously the same. And this is a neat device. My personal opinion is that it is often used whenever you have index fossils that turn up in places they're not supposed to be. This is a device that would allow that kind of thing at least to be ignored, if not hidden. Now, continue with his quote. "Among the creatures that have thus remained unchanged through all the course of evolutionary history are the very protozoa with which evolution is supposed to have begun. And that's interesting. Again, we can let the evolutionists fuss over what they think the original cells were. Whatever they were, we still have those have protozoans around. And Dr. Morris is simply making an observation consistent with, really the same, he's making the same observation that Darwin was saying the objection would cause people to disregard his whole theory. Now, Dr. Etheridge, who is curator of the British Museum, in all this great museum, there is not a particle of evidence of transmutation of species. 9/10 of the talk of evolutionists is sheer nonsense and not founded on observation and wholly unsupported by fact. This museum is full of proofs of the utter falsity of their views. So, not only contrary to the transitional business, we have this persistence of species that is repeatable over and over and over and over and over. We see instances of that. And we, of course, have to take into account the difficulty that is involved with the evolutionary time frame. And the fact is that the extreme periods of time for the evolutionists really don't work in their favor. I think one of the reasons they were dreamed up is an effort to give time for the kinds of changes to occur that are necessary. But there are some immense problems that accompany the time periods. For example, if we've had evolution going on for 600 million years since the beginning of Cambrian, again, where are all the intermediate species? There is certainly time there. Where are all of the carcasses of all of these intermediate species that should have appeared during that lengthy period of time? So time is really not a... It really causes some difficulty for the evolutionist. Now, I want to read you one last quote. I think we have time before the program's over. This is from Stephen M. Stanley in New Evolutionary Timetable, Fossils, Genes, and Origin of the Species. Quote, "The fossil record now reveals that species typically survive for 100,000 generations or even a million or more without evolving, very much. We seem forced to conclude that most evolution takes place very rapidly when species come into being by the evolutionary divergence of small populations from parent species. After their origins, most species undergo little evolution before becoming extinct." So here's an evolutionist making a comment consistent with the idea of persistence of species.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.